Hello, Main Menu listeners. This is Kevin Reeves from Traverse City, Michigan, welcoming you to another year of fine Main Menu programming. I feel that we went out with a bang in 2002, and now I hope to come in with a bang this year with a multi-part series dealing with the Macintosh computer, Pro Tools, and the outspoken for Macintosh 9.0 screen reading software. I feel like it's about time that we show off the power of the Macintosh computer and the accessibility of its respective software. When I contacted Jonathan about doing this, he was very excited and said that he had been waiting a long time for somebody to do this and to really get deep into this system. He also offered me as much time as I wanted to do this, but instead of giving you 2 hours of hardcore demonstration of this system, I thought it would be better to do this in a multi-part series every other week. And the reason I'm going to do it every other week is so that I can give these presentations time to air, and then I can give you time to email me with questions or comments about the previous presentation and things you want to see demonstrated. So I don't know if this is the first in Main Menu history, but this is going to be one of the times where listener feedback will be essential. I have kind of a tentative plan on what I want to show to you, but I really feel like if you have the chance to query me for the information that you desire as a Main Menu listener, I feel like that's just a better path and that will better represent this product. Before we start tonight with the actual demonstration, I need to take 15 minutes or so and outlay some things, make some points, dispel some myths, and give some disclaimers. If you were to go this route, you need to know that this takes a lot of preparation. It takes a lot of reading, a lot of dialogue, a lot of education. But if you're wanting to do this, and I'm going to explain in a minute why I wanted to do this, if you're wanting to either make the switch or make the addition of a Macintosh computer into your system, it's worth it. It really is worth it. Some people don't want to take the time and take the hard knocks of trying to get things to work, and they want things to be turnkey, which means to be able to pull it out of the box, set it up, and go. While that's a good convenience for all of us, it's not always the most rewarding thing, because what we end up with is a spoon-fed computer system where we're kind of handed everything and we don't take the time to really get into the setup and configuration of our system and why it needs to work a certain way. But that's just my personal opinion. We're going to get into some of that in a minute here. But for starters, you're probably asking yourself, why would a guy who's got everything as far as accessibility, which I'm a JAWS 4.5 user, who uses a Windows machine, who's got accessibility up the wazoo, if something isn't accessible, he can either buy or download scripts to make it work, why go to a Macintosh? Well, to answer that, I need to take you back a few years and kind of give you a history of where I've gone in terms of computers and audio production and such. As some of you know, I am a musician and I am very much into audio production, and I started out with a 4-track recorder. After growing out of that, I discovered the wonders of digital audio and purchased a Roland VS1680 studio workstation. But the problem was, I could track on it, but I couldn't do anything else. I could set up 8 or 9 tracks and do some punch-ins and real basic stuff. But I couldn't save anything to disk. I couldn't burn to CD. I couldn't bounce. I didn't know how to add effects. I couldn't edit. So there was a lot that I was missing, and it really frustrated me because of the accessibility. Now, there are those out there who have used a Roland VS1680 and the other products in that VS series and have been very successful, who happen to be blind, who use that stuff and they're very good with it. They took the time and got the sighted assistance and went in and was able to memorize all the key pushes and everything. But in my situation, I needed something where I didn't have to rely on anybody, because I was doing work for other people, I was doing my own production, and I needed to be quick, and I needed to be efficient. And so I started to look into the Cake Talking product for Cakewalk 9. I was kind of messing around with Cakewalk a little bit, and I got as far as purchasing a Motu 2408 MK2 interface, and I was going to go and get the Cake Talking scripts, and I had talked to Bill McCann. We had a really nice discussion, and we talked about accessibility and a couple other things, and he sent me the demo, and I listened to a demonstration of Greg Brayton as he went in and did some sequencing and quantizing and taking out events and things like this. And it was very, very efficient what he was doing. I was much impressed, and I was very close to getting that system. Now, at the same time that this was occurring, I was at a college in Greenville, Illinois, that studied audio production and studio techniques and all of this stuff. But they were using the Macintosh computer with Pro Tools. And I started to get angry with the fact that all of my sighted counterparts were graduating from this college and were immediately heading off to Nashville or LA to do production work because they had the education under their belt and they were empowered with the ability to use Pro Tools, which, for those of you who may not know, is a recording package that is very ubiquitous in the recording field. If a studio isn't using it to track directly to, they might be using it for editing purposes. But suffice it to say, 80% of the commercial recording market is using this program, and they are using it on the Mac. And it just burned me up that while I could get access to recording software, it wasn't what everybody was using. Unfortunately, with all due respect to those who work with Cakewalk, it's kind of looked at as a home product in the pro market. It hasn't really been embraced by major studios. I don't know this from years of experience and tons of research. I know this from word of mouth and conversations that I have had with people who do this every day, people who don't do this as a hobby but as a breadwinning occupation. These people view Cakewalk and Sonar as home studio semi-pro pieces of software. Now, I believe that if Cakewalk were to be embraced into the studio environment, people might see that it is a powerful software. I've heard some amazing stuff come off of a Cakewalk system. I know that it can be done. So I'm personally not sitting here saying that Cakewalk is an inferior product. I'm going by what the industry is saying. And as disappointing as it may sound, it is reality. And I have had to struggle with this, and I have had to face this. This was a disappointing letdown for me to see the fact that I've got all this access to a program, but I could not use this to get into a job. It's not like you can say, hire me, oh, but do you mind if I bring in my own system? That's not really the way it works. They want to be able to hire you knowing that you can use a certain system, such as Pro Tools. And with the use of Pro Tools, seeing as how 80% of studios use it, there is a great sense of compatibility between studios. Since everybody's using the same thing, people can swap things back and forth. And the PC-Mac divide is definitely thinning. People are able to now do stuff on Cakewalk and fly it into Pro Tools. I've seen it done millions of times at my college. People are able to do things in Pro Tools and fly it into Cakewalk. I've seen that done millions of times. But even with these crossbreeding of systems, you still have the obstacle of an employer saying, can you use Pro Tools? And you kind of looking at them saying, no, but I can use Cakewalk and Sonar really well. That's analogous to getting hired at a business and only knowing how to use a Mac, and them asking you, can you use Excel? And you saying, no, but I can use Claris. You see, it works both ways. Because while Excel is usable on the Mac, and while people have been able to load it and use it, there is a definite issue with file transfer from one computer to another via Mac to PC or PC to Mac sometimes. Employers don't want to deal with that. They want to know that you can use the product that they are using. They want to know that you can use that system and you know how to do it. With that in mind, I started to really struggle with this and to really doubt myself as a potential employee of a studio. And I said, well, maybe I should can this whole thing altogether and just deal with being a musician and build a little home studio on the side that's got Cakewalk in it and just not get employed into the main studio market. Then I was faced with another quandary, and that was, if I can the whole studio job thing and just try to work on my music, then what am I going to do for a 9-to-5 while I'm trying to get my music off the ground? So I felt stuck between a rock and a hard place. I could either go into the studio world, not being able to use the products that everybody was using, or not go into the studio world, just do music, and get a 9-to-5 job outside of my field of interest. And, you know, you could say, well, lots of people do it, so why can't you? But I want to do this for real. You know, I don't want to have a musical hobby. I want to get up every morning, go to a place, and do this, be it recording, or be it playing, or whatever. I didn't want to get a job that I didn't like and then come home and do music. I want to live music. And whether it's editing vocal tracks or whether it's producing an album, I consider that all worthwhile, and not to mention fun. So I was definitely faced with a quandary. I was looking at leaving the college that I was going to and looking for a college that may very well be using Cakewalk and Sonar, and I could load Cake Talking and all of that beautiful stuff. But I never found it. Everybody was using Pro Tools or 2-inch tape or whatever. I did the research. I looked at some of the major colleges, and nobody was really embracing the whole Cakewalk Sonar thing. And I was really let down because I wanted to go that route, and I knew how easy it was to set it up and use it. But I felt cut off from the sighted world, and that really bothers me. So now we flash forward to last May, May of 2002, and I was perusing the MIDI Mag list one day and came across a message that was in reply to something that I had posted that was totally unrelated to Pro Tools but dealt with the Macintosh system. I got this message from a gentleman out of New York by the name of Jerry Hallaton, and all it said was, I can do anything you need, give me a call, and he left his number. So I called the guy, and I talked with him for about 10 minutes. And he began to tell me that he was a partially blind user who needed access to software, and he used Macintosh exclusively. We then began to talk about recording software, and I started to rant and rave to him about my access issues with the Mac. And he told me flat out that Pro Tools was accessible with the Mac, and that the latest Macintosh operating system, which was 9.2 at the time, was fully accessible with Outspoken 9.0. Before the phone call was completed, he sent me some emails with some links in them to look at some different websites that dialogued on this issue. So after getting off the phone with him, I spent hours reading the information that he had sent me, and I just followed link after link and just started to absorb all of this. And by the end of that night, I was certain that A, Pro Tools was accessible, and B, this was the route I ultimately needed to go. So a few months later, after more diligent research, I went out and purchased a PowerMac G4 with all the trimmings and a Pro Tools system. I spent the last 5 months in intense, continuous education on this thing. And now, after my experiences, I can personally safely say that this thing is accessible and is worth the effort and time put into this to learn it and to use it, and it is worth the money to purchase it. So with that said, I need to make a few disclaimers here before we get moving. In a few moments here, we're going to begin our journey into the Macintosh system. But I want to shed some light on some things so that there's no confusion when we get into this here. First, I want to say that I am not doing this presentation for the sake of causing an accessibility flame war here. I want to show you another way of doing things. There are millions of ways to record an audio track. There's everything from the $20 Multitrack Pro or whatever that's out there on the PC, all the way up to Cakewalk and Sonar on the PC, and Nuendo and Cubase and Digital Performer and Pro Tools. There's a million ways to do this. And what needs to be considered here is the fact that when you pop that CD into the CD player and give it a listen, it's ultimately going to sound the same. It's going to be a bunch of ones and zeros. Now, it's going to sound different in regard to how you process it or what kind of plugins you use or what kind of equalization you use, but a signal is a signal, and ones and zeros are ones and zeros. And while there may be minuscule differences from product to product, it all boils down to which one works for you, which one is affordable for you, and which one gives you the flexibility and gives you the ability to create. That's the main purpose of why we do this. That's why there's a MIDI Mag list, and that's why there's a PC Audio list. It's people creating something, whether it's music or whether it's talk or whatever. It's people getting an idea in their head, using a vehicle for their audio production, be it on a Mac or a PC, and getting it out to the people. The reasoning behind my wanting to demonstrate this tonight is because I am convinced that if blind students who are in audio production and blind musicians who really want to integrate with their sighted counterparts would take the time and listen to this and really consider going this route, I feel that they will be most rewarded for their efforts, because they will ultimately be the ones who have what the sighted world has, and that's access to one of the most ubiquitous recording packages on the market at this point. And look, there are things that Pro Tools doesn't do as well as other programs, and I will be the first to communicate those to you as well. I'm not presenting this from a one-sided point of view. I'm not preaching the gospel of Pro Tools and saying that the rest of you are lost without this program, because I don't feel that way. However, I am wanting to make it very clear that if you choose to work in the sighted environment of a recording studio, you need to be aware of this software, and you need to know how it works, and you need to know how to use it. I really feel that from the bottom of my heart. If you're wanting to set up a home studio and have clients come in, such as the Audio Production Den or Brayton & Sons Productions, Cakewalk is a fine product to do that with, because both of these companies do great work on a PC. But if you are serious about wanting to integrate into other people's studios, be it a commercial studio or a sighted person's home studio, you need to know that most of these guys are going to be utilizing Pro Tools, and you need to be aware of some of the pitfalls if you choose not to go this route. And it is doable, but it is going to be a little bit harder to integrate and collaborate with others, unless everybody you collaborate and integrate with are using the Cakewalk line of products. I just want to bring that to your attention. From my perspective, I have dreams of both working at a commercial recording studio and working at home. Now, I want to be able to use Pro Tools in both environments so that I can bring my work back and forth via an external FireWire drive that I have. As far as what platforms I personally use, when it comes to my internet work, such as reading my emails, browsing the internet, or listening to main menu and things like that, I'm still a PC user. As far as writing Word documents and things, again, I do that on a PC. So I am using both the Mac and the PC to be productive in my pursuits. There's one more point I want to make before we delve into this. What you're going to hear tonight, some of it you're probably going to look at and say, well, God, I can do that much easier on JAWS. But here's the reasoning behind the steeper learning curve and the sometimes inconvenient key presses that have to go on to either get the feedback you're looking for or to perform a certain function. It all stems from the fact that Outspoken's only job is to give you feedback about what's on the screen. It doesn't modify the screen in a way allowing you to get at certain buttons or certain dialog boxes easier. For instance, in a Jaws setting, you can do many keystrokes that put things at your reach very easily, such as putting your system tray in a list view so that you can open up the context menu for each one, or putting your links in a list so that you can select them in alphabetical order, or putting your toolbar buttons in a list so that you can access them much easier than tabbing around or mousing around with your JAWS cursors. Now, Outspoken doesn't do those things, and I think it's a good thing, and here's why. When you use something that's highly scripted, like Cakewalk Pro Audio 9, you're dealing with tons of screen modifications so that a blind user can get at dialogues and things very, very easily. Where this becomes a downfall is when a blind user needs to interact with a sighted user and either teach this person how to use the program or be taught how to use the program. There is a communication breakdown because the blind user is dealing in key presses such as tab three times or alt tab or shift tab or down arrow, up arrow, whatever. And the sighted user is dealing in things like click on that icon in the upper right-hand corner of your screen or drag this over into this window or double-click that. So it's a very visual thing. With Outspoken and the Macintosh system, you are forced to know where things are on the screen at all times. And you are also forced to think in sighted terms, such as clicking and dragging. It's just the reality of this system. And frankly, I think it's a good reality. I think it's good that blind users start learning ways that the sighted community accesses technology. I feel that this is a definite sign that blind people are desiring to integrate more with the sighted community on their level. So, just one final word of warning here. If you want a system that's easy and can be easily modified and can put things in your reach immediately, then this is not for you. However, if you are desiring to learn what the sighted community uses and integrate with the sighted community in that way, and if you're willing to take the time to learn this system and apply some new concepts to your computing experience, you will find this to be a rewarding and successful venture. I'm sitting here saying that this is not easy, but I'm not saying that this isn't doable and that it's impossible and very few can handle it. I'm saying if you're willing to take the time and apply this, you can do it. Okay, everything has been said that I need to say here. It is now time to begin this exploration into the Mac. I'll begin by describing the makeup of a Macintosh computer and what different computers are available in the Macintosh line. First of all, this machine I'm currently using is a PowerMac G4 933 with 1.24 gigs of RAM, 60 gig internal hard drive, and a DVD RAM CD burner. And when I mean DVD RAM, I mean that it allows me to author DVDs and burn them to DVDs and play them on set-top players and other computer DVD drives. The G series of computers are comparable to the Pentium computers in that there are Pentium 1 through 4 available. The only difference is that the G series of computers started at G3. I don't think there was a G1 or a G2 out there. The difference between the G3 and the G4 is expandability and chip architecture. In the G4 now, they're allowing dual processors, which they did not allow in the G3s. You can buy a card to upgrade your G3 to a G4, but I feel like it's better just to buy a G4 and be on with it. Available on the market right now are G4s that contain dual 866 processors. The top of the line is a dual 1.4 gig machine. Now, when I bought this, this is a single 933. It was second in line underneath the dual 1.4 gig machine, and below this one was a single 866 processor. The reason they've moved to the dual processors is due to the fact that OS 10 supports that architecture, whereas OS 9.2 does not. We're not going to discuss OS 10 in this presentation because OS 10 is not yet accessible with Outspoken, nor is it accessible with Pro Tools yet. So I chose to buy the single processor so that I could get more bang for my buck at this point. Now let's move on to discuss the Macintosh computer and what it looks like. This PowerMac G4 Tower is a very streamlined looking machine, and it's clear so you can see inside it all the wiring and the cards and everything. The first thing that drew me to this machine was the ability to open it very quickly. On the right side of the tower is a ring that you pull up, and you can pull the whole side down like a door, and it lays flat on the floor. The even cooler thing is the fact that the motherboard is attached to the side of the computer there. So essentially, when you open the door and let it lay down like that, your cards mount vertically. So gone are the days where you open the computer and fish around through all the wires looking for the slot to install the card, and then you have to push it away from you and then push it to your left to make sure the thing is locked in. With a Mac, when you open the computer, your PCI, ISA, and AGP slots are completely visible, both visually and tactily. There are no wires or anything else covering and or obstructing access to those slots. A couple days ago, I installed an Adaptec PCI SCSI adapter, and it took me less than 30 seconds to do it. Your screws for the card mount in on the top, so gone are the days where you have to position the thing and hope to God it doesn't fall off your screwdriver. You actually have gravity working in your favor. I do want to bring up one downfall to when mounting a screw in your Macintosh. The side where the screws mount in has a lip on it, and the lip kind of juts out over top of where that screw is, making it hidden. In result, it's hard to get your fingers in there to find the hole and make sure the card bracket is lined up properly so that you can successfully screw it in. I actually had to get somebody to help me do that because it was my very first time screwing a card into my Macintosh. I'm sure there's a way to figure it out, but that day I was in a hurry and I just had to get some eyes for a second. But it did get done. When you want to close up the computer, all you do is just lift the side up and let it click into place. But no more screws, no more pulling sides off and having to align tracks. It's a very, very ingenious and intuitive setup. Moving to the back of the computer, one of the first things you come across when you're looking at the back in the upper right-hand corner, you'll find an 1/8-inch headphone jack. This is for the main output of the computer. It comes with a speaker on the front, but if you want to hook it into a sound system, you can do it via this jack. This brings me to another positive thing about this computer. This computer comes with a built-in sound card that works very well. Not only does it integrate well with Outspoken, but it plays MP3s, and it'll play your DVDs back in true stereo. And gone are the days of worrying about multi-channel or full duplex or half duplex or anything that might prohibit the user from fully accessing speech. Below that, you'll find two jacks that look like phone plugs. One of them is the modem. The other one is the Ethernet port. Another positive thing about this computer is it has a built-in Ethernet port, so gone are the days of configuring Linksys Ethernet cards and the like. Under those two ports, you'll find two FireWire ports, also known as IEEE 1394. These two ports are horizontal, and they are parallel to each other. They kind of look like two USB ports, but turned on their side. Under that, you'll find the USB ports. These are very identifiable, as they look just like they would on a PC, vertical and parallel to each other side by side. As we move downward on the back of the Macintosh, we come to a small divider that juts out. This divides all of the ports from the expansion slots. And just like on a PC, the expansion slots are horizontal and stacked on top of each other, so hooking things up to a Mac is as simple as hooking things up to a PC. And if you're familiar with the PC's rear panel layout, you'll have no trouble at all with hooking things up to a Mac. Moving to the front of the Mac. If we start from the top, you'll see a handle that juts out. There are four handles on this machine. One on the top, one on the bottom, and then on the rear, top and bottom. This gives the user ease of portability. Now, this machine by no means is portable, but it's much easier than carrying a PC tower, because now you have actual handles that you can hold and evenly distribute the weight. Underneath the handle is a door for a CD-ROM drive. Now on the Mac, you won't find an eject button on your CD-ROM drive. That's because there's a dedicated key on the actual keyboard itself to eject the CD. In my opinion, this is an easier way to go, but for those who are so used to hitting the eject button on the CD-ROM drive, it's going to be hard to get used to at first. However, I have seen some Macs that actually have a CD-ROM drive with an eject button on it. I guess it just depends on which machine you end up with. Below that is another panel that's blank. This one you can pull out and install another type of removable drive or maybe another CD-ROM drive. And then below that empty plate, you'll find your standard on-off button, just like you would find on a PC. It's a large circular button. And to turn the machine on, you just press it once. And just like a PC, if you were to hold the button in, you would turn the machine off without properly shutting it down. Underneath the large on-off button is a very small circular button, which is the reset. If you're very familiar with your PC's front panel, you will also have no trouble getting around a Mac. You're probably asking yourself, well, where's the floppy drive? Apple Computer Incorporated decided to do away with the floppy drive years and years ago. Their thinking is that floppies are being phased out by other removable media, and so they decided not to incorporate it into their machine. However, if you still have a need to use floppies, you can purchase a small USB floppy drive, which is only $50, and use that to access any floppies that you need for your Mac. Well, ladies and gentlemen, due to some technical difficulties that have occurred, due to some other time constraints that I'm dealing with here in trying to get this to air on Tuesday the 21st, I'm unfortunately having to end part one of the series sooner than I wanted to. This means that we're not able to spend the rest of this first part in exploring the Mac operating system and letting you hear Outspoken. Essentially, my problem is this. I am right now recording this presentation in Pro Tools. With my first attempt to record the output of Outspoken into Pro Tools itself, I discovered that Pro Tools was actually dominating my entire system, and I couldn't see the desktop and was not able to access or move files. So my next goal was to record in SoundForge the output of my Macintosh. The problem I'm running into now is the fact that I lack the appropriate cabling to do this. So instead of pushing my whole presentation back a week, I have chosen to end part one here with our description of the Macintosh and pick it up again in a week when I have the appropriate cables. Because by then I will have the cables I need to properly record all of the outputs, both Pro Tools and Outspoken, into SoundForge 6. I apologize for any disappointment and or inconvenience this may have caused. So let me close part one of the series by offering you some websites containing valuable resources that deal strictly with Outspoken and Pro Tools. The first website you need to go to is www.rickboggs.com. That's www.rickboggs.com. Rick Boggs was one of the very first blind Pro Tools users. Back in 94, he installed Outspoken on a Pro Tools system, and in essence, Outspoken and Pro Tools collided, and the machine crashed. He then contacted DigiDesign, which is the makers of Pro Tools, and asked them if they could alter certain aspects of their code so that Pro Tools would work properly. Once this was achieved, he began to build a knowledge base for how one could use Pro Tools with Outspoken and be successful with it. He now currently runs a business called Audio Adventures, which handles all of the video descriptive services found on Fox and CBS. If you'd like to access that website, point your browser to www.audioadventures.com. That's www.audioadventures.com. Another website that Rick Boggs set up is www.blindproducers.com. This site gives a full description of what is needed for a blind person to become fully integrated and successful in the sighted recording market. Again, that's www.blindproducers.com. If you are interested in looking at Outspoken, go to the Alva Access Group website, which is www.aagi.com. Again, that's www.aagi.com. Here, you can download the Mac demo of Outspoken, and you can also access different resources in regards to keystrokes and other instructional material in regard to Outspoken. The last two resources that I'd like to give you are two personal resources that I have set up for blind users. They are two discussion lists, one for blind Pro Tools users and one for Outspoken in general. To access the Pro Tools list, send a blank email to blindptlist-subscribe@topica.com. That's blindptlist-subscribe@topica.com. On this list, we have everyone from resident Pro Tools professionals all the way down to people who are lurking and just gathering information to see if Pro Tools would best suit their needs. So I encourage anyone who is interested in this and would like to ask any Pro Tools questions that they have to feel free and sign up. The Outspoken list is for any operational questions about the Mac in general and any questions relating to the operations of Outspoken itself. To join that list, send a blank email to outspokenlist-subscribe@topica.com. That's outspokenlist-subscribe@topica.com. If you would like to send questions to me personally in regard to this presentation, or if you have any issues that you would like me to bring up in part two of this series, feel free to email me at reevesman@hotmail.com. That's reevesman@hotmail.com. I am on MSN, so that is also my MSN screen name. You can feel free to add me to your list and ask me any questions that you desire. If you'd like to get in contact with me via AOL Instant Messenger, my screen name is Fogman003. That's Fogman003. Well, I hope that you have found part one of this series to be informative and somewhat enjoyable, even though I wasn't able to get to the real meat of what I wanted to show to you for this presentation. I still hope that I was able to set up for you a good foundation so that when we begin next time, we can start immediately in exploring the Mac operating system, which will then lead us to our final destination, which is to explore the Pro Tools recording software. It's going to be slow going the first couple of presentations, but I hope that through my getting used to doing this and your communications with me, things will begin to progress more rapidly as we get deeper and deeper into this system. I thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to all of your emails and instant messages. I wish you all a happy and prosperous 2003, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.